TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The Best of Bernie Sanders, High Points from His Senate Filibuster. Today, International Trade, Trade Deficit, and Job Losses.
Today I've been devoting a lot of time to our national debt, $13.7 trillion, and to our deficit, which is $1.4 trillion. But we cannot ignore our trade deficit. In 2008, our trade deficit was nearly $700 billion. Last year, our trade deficit with China alone was almost $227 billion.
When Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders held the floor in the Senate with his 8.5-hour filibuster in December 2010, he spoke passionately against the extension of the tax breaks to the richest of the rich. This was not the right solution to the current job crisis in the U.S., he said. In fact, it made matters worse. In his filibuster, Sanders disclosed what he called the jaw-dropping $12.3 trillion in secret loan funding handed out by the Federal Reserve, and made a passionate appeal to break up the largest banks, including Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo. Today, you will hear what he has to say about the role international trade played in destroying jobs and the U.S. economy, while greatly concentrating the power of corporations and banks. Senator Bernie Sanders.
Mr. President, when we talk about why the middle class is declining, that is a tough issue, and I'm not here to suggest that I know all of the answers. I surely don't. But let me touch on a few areas that I think will explain why poverty is going up and the middle class is going down. And one of them deals with our trade policies. A number of years ago, I was in the House of Representatives, and I can remember the lobbyists and the big money interests coming around and saying, well, if you guys only pass NAFTA, this would create a whole lot of jobs in the United States because we would be able to ship products made in America to Mexico. And in fact, as I recall, and it seems almost humorous now, what they said is that if we passed NAFTA, it would solve the problem of illegal immigration because the economy of Mexico would be so strong that people would stay in their own country and not try to sneak across the border. And that is, as we look back on it, somewhat humorous that that issue was even discussed. But one of the reasons, Mr. President, that unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, we have not dealt with is our disastrous trade policy. Trade policies which have encouraged large corporations in this country to send jobs abroad because they can find workers in other countries, in low-wage countries, who are prepared to work for pennies an hour. And you know, I think not only haven't we addressed this issue from an economic perspective the way we should, and I have to tell you, Mr. President, I know that during campaigns, a lot of members of Congress put their 30-second ads on the air saying how concerned they are about outsourcing and our trade policy, but somehow the day after the election, I don't hear that discussion resumed on the floor of the House of the Senate. And I want to say this is true not just of Republicans, but of Democrats as well. A lot of Democrats campaign on the need for trade reform, but it doesn't happen. In fact, I've been here in the Senate now for almost 4 years, and I have not heard one serious, underlying serious discussion to explain how in recent years we have lost millions and millions of manufacturing jobs when those jobs were the backbone of the working class of this country, providing not only decent wages, but decent benefits, decent health care, decent pensions. Mr. President, there was once a time in this country when a manufacturing job was a ticket to the middle class. And I got to say something, because I remember not so many years ago, there were national leaders are saying, well, to the young people, you don't have to worry about that factory work anymore. You don't have to be involved in production because you know what? All of the jobs in the future is going to be nice and clean in offices and on computers. And I think we demeaned and insulted the people who built the products that we consume. There is nothing wrong with a factory job, if work is there, earn a decent wage, and have a decent benefit. Those are the jobs that built America. And where are we today in terms of our manufacturing capabilities? A couple of weeks ago, my wife and I went shopping. It was just a plain old department store. Literally, very hard to find a product not manufactured in China. Very hard to find a product, a gift that we could buy that was manufactured in the United States of America. And I think people understand instinctually that this country will not be a major economic player in years to come if we allow our manufacturing base to continue to decline. Again, just under Bush, we went from 17 million manufacturing jobs down to 12 million jobs in 8 years of Bush. How do we survive as a strong industrial power if our manufacturing jobs disappear? Today, Mr. President, there are fewer manufacturing jobs in this country than there were in April of 1941, about 8 months before the attack on Pearl Harbor. Fewer manufacturing jobs today than in April of 1941. And those manufacturing jobs that are left, in many cases, pay lower wages with fewer benefits than they did a generation ago. In other words, we are moving not only in a decline in our manufacturing jobs, but in the wages that our workers earn and the benefits that they receive. And I raise all of these issues to put this agreement between the president and the Republican leadership in a broader context. Today, and this is just an incredible fact, and it is just absolutely frightening to the future of the middle class in this country. Today, entry-level automobile workers at General Motors and Chrysler now earn half as much as their peers made just 1 year ago. Instead of making $28 an hour, a middle-class wage, they are now making $14 an hour. And this is in the automobile industry, which has always been the gold standard for manufacturing jobs in America. And if workers with a union in the automobile industry are making $14 an hour, what do you think workers in New Mexico are going to be making without a strong union? So what you are seeing is a dissolution of the middle class. Wages are going down. And in this remarkable example, a 50% reduction. The older workers making good wages, new workers half the wages. Is this the future of America? Is this what our kids have to look forward to? That they're going to be earning half the wages that their fathers made, that their mothers made? Is that the future? And in the midst of all of that, we run up a huge national debt, send our jobs to China, and we give tax breaks to billionaires? Is that the future these kids have to look forward to? I certainly hope not. But let me tell you something. We're going to have to be tough, and we're going to have to take on some very powerful special interests to turn this whole thing around. Mr. President, you know, we often talk, and today I've been devoting a lot of time to our national debt, $13.7 trillion, and to our deficit, which is $1.4 trillion. But we cannot ignore our trade deficit. In 2008, our trade deficit was nearly $700 billion. Last year, our trade deficit with China alone was almost $227 billion. In other words, we are purchasing a whole lot more product than we are selling. And sometimes I get a kick out of hearing the defenders of our trade policy talk about all of the product that we are exporting. Well, yeah, we are exporting a lot, but we are importing a heck of a lot more. So, Mr. President, I think what you got is a major economic issue here, and that economic issue is that we are losing millions of good-paying jobs because of our disastrous trade policies, and furthermore, the jobs that we have. On those jobs, we're seeing a decline in wages and in benefits. And I think the bottom line of this is not just, if you like, an economic issue. It's a moral issue as well. And that is when companies like General Electric and all the rest, I don't mean to be picking hard on General Electric, but I have a quote here, which I want to make. This was a few years back. I think it's important because it applies not just to General Electric, but I want people to hear this. GE is, of course, one of our major corporations, and in fact, as recent disclosure pointed out, the taxpayers of this country through the Fed provided $16 billion in bailout to General Electric during the recent crisis. This is what the head of CEO of General Electric, Jeffrey Immelt, said in 2002, December 6th. Quote, Jeff Immelt, head of CEO, "When I am talking to GE managers, I talk China, 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 five Chinas. You need to be there. You need to change the way people talk about it and how they get there. I am a nut on China. Outsourcing from China is going to grow to 5 billion. We are building a tech center in China. Every discussion today has to center on China. The cost basis is extremely attractive. You can take an 18 cubic foot refrigerator, make it in China, land it in the United States, and land it for less than we can make an 18 cubic foot refrigerator today ourselves." End of quote. Jeffrey Immelt, chairman, CEO of General Electric, quoted in an investor meeting on December 6, 2002. When GE recently had a couple of years ago some really difficult economic times, they needed $16 billion to bail them out. I didn't hear Mr. Immelt going to China, 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 China. I didn't hear that. I heard Mr. Immelt going to the taxpayers of the United States for his welfare check. So I say to Mr. Immelt, and I say to all of these CEOs who have been so quick to run to China, that maybe it's time to start reinvesting in the United States of America. But it's not just Mr. Immelt. And I don't mean to just pick on him, it's all of them. They all see the future in China, in Vietnam, in countries where people work for pennies an hour. Now, Mr. Immelt came to his position in the footsteps of the former CEO of GE, Jack Welch. And what Jack Welch was famously quoted as saying, he said, "Ideally, we'd have every plant we own on a barge." End of quote. You remember that quote? What did he mean by that? What he meant by that, if you're on a barge, you can move your plant to any part of the world where the labor is cheapest. So if it gets too expensive in China and you got to pay people 75 cents an hour, you go to Vietnam. If it gets too expensive in Vietnam, maybe you can go to North Korea and have people work under martial law. I don't know. But what he was saying is his goal was to make sure that GE would create jobs in those countries in the world where workers were paid the lowest possible wages. And former GE Executive Vice President Frank Doyle said, and I quote, "We did a lot of violence to the expectations of the American workforce. We downsized, we delayered, and we outsourced." He was honest enough to admit what he did. But again, I don't mean to just pick on Jeff Immelt or General Electric. It is a history of corporations all over America. Let me just mention CEO of Cisco, John Chambers. And this is what he says. Then, you know, we tell the young people the future is in information technology. We want you guys to be smart, learn how to use the computers. You're not going to work in factories. This is what the CEO of Cisco, certainly one of the large IT companies in the United States, said. He said, quote, "China will become the IT center of the world. And we can have a healthy discussion about whether that's in 2020 or 2040. What we are trying to do is outline an entire strategy of becoming a Chinese company." End of quote. John Chambers, CEO of Cisco. This was in 2004. Furthermore, he says, "We believe in giving something back and truly becoming a Chinese company." Meanwhile, when Cisco needs tax breaks, they get it from the taxpayers of the United States of America. Boy, are they taking us for dummies. Now, in the last campaign, one of the folks who ended up getting a lot more publicity, I think, than he usually does, is the president and CEO of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a gentleman named Tom Donahue. And again, my point tonight is not to just to pick on individuals, because every quote that I'm giving you now can be multiplied 50, 100 times over. This is what corporate America believes. They believe that it is totally appropriate to throw American workers out on the street, move to low-wage countries, China and other countries, pay people a few cents an hour, bring their products back into the United States. Thomas Donahue is the president and CEO of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he got a lot of publicity recently, especially during the last election, because the Chamber of Commerce became the funnel for a lot of money that went into campaigns around this country. They raised tens and tens of millions of dollars. A lot of that money, I believe, was undisclosed. So all the rich folks and the billionaires gave money to the Chamber of Commerce, and they were able to elect candidates that were sympathetic to their point of view. So let's find out what their point of view is. This is a quote, again, going back to 2004. Thomas Donahue, quote, "One job sent overseas, if it happens to be my job, is one too many. But the benefits of offshoring jobs outweighs the cost." End of quote. Tom Donahue, president and CEO of the largest business organization in America. They are in favor of offshoring American jobs. They think it is a good idea because they understand that if corporations throw American workers out on the street and go to China and pay people their pennies an hour, they are going to make more profits. That's what they say. Give them credit. They're upfront about it. We don't care about the United States of America. We don't care about young people. We don't care about the future of this country. Jeff Immelt told us the future of the world is in China. And here is a quote that appeared in one of the papers, an AP story. U.S. Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Thomas Donahue. This is the head of the largest business organization in America. That's where all these businesses come together to develop policy, to lobby us, to provide campaign contributions. U.S. Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Thomas Donahue urged American companies to send jobs overseas. Now, that's really patriotic. That's standing up for the United States of America. Donahue said Wednesday that exporting high-paid tech jobs to low-cost countries such as India, China, and Russia saves companies money. It is no surprise that Donahue, who tripled the Chamber of Commerce's lobbying team since 1997 and aggressively promotes pro-business policies, endorses offshoring. The 3 million member organizations of the Chamber of Commerce, the world's largest business consortium, champions tax cuts, free trade, workers' compensation reform, and more liberal trade policies with China. End of quote. What more do you need when you want to understand why we have lost millions of good-paying manufacturing jobs, why wages are going down? What more do you need when the president of the Chamber of Commerce tells you that he thinks it is good public policy to send jobs to China? Now, in a moment, what I'm going to be talking about is how these ideas from the big money people become implemented into policy, which has to do a lot with lobbying and campaign contributions. Before I go there, I want to talk about how the business leaders of this country feel about the workers of this country and the young people of this country. This, again, is a quote that I apologize. It is a few years old, but 2004, perhaps? 2004. Quote, January 19th. This is from Alan Lacy, who was then the CEO of Sears Roebuck and Company. This is what he said. Quote, "There are four or five times as many smart, driven people in China than there are in the United States. And there's another four or five, three or four times as many people in India that are smarter or as smart or have more drive. And if technology is now going to basically reduce location as a barrier to competition, i.e., you have a worldwide web and you could do your work in China or India, then essentially you've got something like whatever that was, 7 or 9 times more smart, committed people that are now competing in this marketplace against certain activities. So we're going to see, I think, this huge incentive to shift some of these more commodity-like knowledge workers' jobs offshore. So here you have our blue-collar jobs decimated, and we told the kids not to worry. You didn't want to work in a factory anyhow. We've got these good information technology, computer-based jobs for you. But then you have the heads of large corporations saying, hey, why do I want to get American young people to do this? I can have Indian young people do it who will work for a fraction of the wages. And I think we all see this. I mean, it's nothing new. You try to get a plane reservation right now and you're talking to somebody in India. And please do not hear me to be anti-India or anti-Chinese. That is the furthest thing that I would want anyone to think. We want to work with people all over the world. But you don't have to destroy the middle class of this country to help people around the world. You don't have to be a corporate CEO to sell out your own people who built your company to run abroad. So this senator is not anti-Chinese, far from it, anti-Indian, anti-Vietnamese, not at all. I guess I plead guilty to being pro-American. I don't know. Maybe that's suspect here. The former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, Carly Fiorina. And this obviously, Ms. Fiorina ran for senator. And this is what she said when she was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard in 2004. She said, quote, "There is no job that is America's God-given right anymore," end of quote. I could go on and on and on, but I think you got the point. And the point is that when things get rough for corporate America, as they did recently for General Electric, they run to the taxpayers of this country in order to be bailed out. But their overall philosophy is that their goal in life is to make as much money as they can in any way they can, and therefore you run to those countries where wages are low. And what you're seeing now, and you're seeing it all of the time, and it's not just blue-collar, it is increasingly white-collar. You have radiologists who are able to read x-rays in India. You have people, people behind the computer can do work in India as well as here. And these corporate folks have taken advantage of that and sold out the young people of this country and the working class of this country. Mr. President, as you know, it is virtually impossible to find anything in a Walmart or other stores like that that is made in America today. This is especially true for clothing. An increasing amount of our clothing comes from Bangladesh. Today, there are 4,000 garment factories in Bangladesh making clothes for Walmart, Gap, JCPenney, Levi Strauss, Tommy Hilfiger, and many, many others. Garment workers in Bangladesh, some 3.5 million of them, and that number is growing, are among the lowest paid workers in the world, and they have difficulty buying enough food and shelter for their own needs. As I mentioned earlier today, the good news is the minimum wage in Bangladesh was doubled. It went from 11.5 cents an hour to 23 cents an hour. So when you buy a shirt made in Bangladesh, you have young women there coming in from the countryside who are paid now, have received a doubling of their minimum wage to 23 cents an hour. Is that something that our people should be asked to compete against? Should we say to the American worker, hey, we can get you jobs. We're prepared to invest in the United States. Yeah, we're an American company. You helped make us great. Thank you for the work you've done over the years. Thank you for purchasing our products. Thank you for making us strong. And if you are prepared to work for $1 an hour, $2 an hour, $3 an hour, we'll come back. And by the way, Mr. President, I think you know this, in the last campaign, what did we hear? What are we beginning to hear rumbles about? Abolishing the minimum wage. Abolishing the minimum wage. Minimum wage now is $7.25 an hour. That's what we say should be the minimum that any American worker gets. There are people out there who are saying, look, if I can hire somebody in China for $2 or $3 an hour, and you want a job in America and I have to pay you $7.25 an hour, why would I want to do that? We abolish the minimum wage? Hey, I may hire you. Now, what a wonderful prospect for our young people to think about working for $4 or $5 an hour. So, Mr. President, I think if we want to understand why the middle class in this country is collapsing, why unemployment is high, why our manufacturing base has been decimated, why it is hard to purchase a product made in the United States, it has a lot to do with our trade policies, which were pushed by people like Mr. Donohue of the Chamber of Commerce and many, many others.
That was the last of a four-part mini-series with excerpts from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech given in the U.S. Senate on December 10, 2010. If you missed Sanders' prior reports on secret funding by the Federal Reserve, handed out during the Wall Street meltdown, or his urgent appeal to break up the largest banks, come to TUC Radio's website at tucradio.org and listen to them online. They're filled with facts and data presented with passion and humor, and most of this has not been followed up by the media. Bernie Sanders was elected to the U.S. Senate in 2006 after serving 16 years in the House of Representatives. He is the longest-serving independent member of Congress in American history. Born in 1941 in Brooklyn, Sanders was the younger of two sons in a modest income family. Before his 1990 election to Congress, Sanders lectured at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. Thanks to C-SPAN for the audio from their 8.5-hour video. Links to the video, to Bernie Sanders' Senate webpage, and to the recipients of Federal Reserve largesse are on TUC Radio's website. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.